This edition of the Monocle Arts Review was first broadcast on the 10th of December 2015 on Monocle 24. Welcome to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Matt Alagaya. I'm joined today by literary editor of The Independent, Arifa Akbar, for our weekly book review. Up for discussion today, we have A Wild Swan and Other Tales, Michael Cunningham's adaptation of classic fairy tales for an older audience. Beyond Belief, Racist, Sexist, Rude, Crude and Dishonest, The Golden Age of Madison Avenue by Charles Saatchi, which delves into the murky world of advertising in the Mad Men era. And we'll end with a look at erotic fiction, with a focus on Chrissy Neen's The Adventures of Holly White and the Incredible Sex Machine. That's all to come here on the Monocle Arts Review with me, Matt Alagaya. Stay tuned. Welcome to the show, Arifa. We're going to start with A Wild Swan and Other Tales, a collection of fairy tales given a reboot for an adult audience by Michael Cunningham. The cast of characters is familiar here. We have Hansel and Gretel, Rumpelstiltskin and Snow White, for instance. But the tales themselves have dark undertones and less than happy endings. Arifa, what did you make of this collection?
I thought, oh, here's another collection of fairy tales for adults. And I sort of groaned. And then I opened them up. And I like Michael Cunningham. We know a lot of us know him through The Hours, but he's retold Death in Venice, you know, a few books ago in by Nightfall. So he's a, you know, past master in retelling tales. I did groan, but then I was quite surprised by these stories. Some are very short. The longest is about 10 pages long. They're not long. You can read them in half an hour a piece. There's that recognition factor, you know, that sort of nostalgia. There's something about fairy tales that we still crave as adults. I never reread anything, so I'm surprised by the fact that I'm drawn to fairy tales. There's something very powerful, isn't there, don't you think?
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, and these tales, so they're comic. They're inversions of things as well. Some are just funny, you know, Jack and the Beanstalk. Jack is this avaricious, consumer-crazy guy. He keeps going up the beanstalk to sort of raid the giant as the good guy, to raid the giant's possessions, and comes back, and it's a sort of commentary on how we live today. Nothing's enough, you know, we want more, 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 the golden goose, everything. But he does that with the lightness of touch and a lot of comedy. But then he'll sort of invert the evil character, Rumpelstiltskin. We really want him to have that. Do you remember the story? You know, he bargains with the woman for the first baby she'll have with a king. And when she has a baby, he wants it. And, you know, when it comes down to it in the fairy tale, Rumpelstiltskin is this evil little creature. Here, we really want him to have the baby. He's a desperately lonely man, and he's got his own moral compass, and he's done right by it, and she's done wrong. Similarly, do you remember Hansel and Gretel, the old lady, the cannibalistic woman who grabs the children and in her candy house? Here, she's really a very lonely woman who's been abandoned. And again, you know, these are reverberations of the world around us, so that you have the lonely outsiders or the elderly people who have sort of been left alone. And there they are in the fairy tales. So they're reborn as people we know and recognise today, which I think is one of the biggest appeals, you know, in modern retellings. That's what I want to read for, to recognise the old archetypes, but actually to recognise my world too.
I mean, I guess that's one thing that fairy tales have, is these kind of two-dimensional archetypal characters.
Yeah.
And what Michael Cunningham seems to do is
he's fleshed them out
and give them this third
dimension.
Exactly.
So there's this magic, you know, of people turning into animals and brothers turning into swans and back again into humans and frogs into princes. But then you have the psychological realism, and he never strays into tongue-in-cheek, you know, look, this is Beauty and the Beast, and isn't it funny I'm doing this, or isn't it clever? He's always, the psychological realism is just really honest, so you do feel a lot of sadness or happiness, or, you know, you actually feel for these people, and you think of them as modern people. So remember the story of the Grimm's fairy tale story of the brothers and the 12, they're turned into swans by the evil stepmother, and then they're turned back by their sister into humans and they live happily ever after. And in the original story, one brother still remains with a wing. You know, he's imperfectly turned back. But here, he's this modern guy with a wing. You know, so this is magical realism, but he's going into bars trying to attract women with this sort of inadequacy on his arm. And in a way, it sort of represents the male, you know, the current sort of slight modern male anxiety in being a man. Like he's trying to do, he's thinking up chat up lines that I'll never actually say. And you just feel for him, you know, he's kind of this barroom loser in a way. I love some of the lines. There's this chat up line, he's thinking, baby, these feathers are going to tickle you halfway to heaven. And this man part is going to take you to the rest of the way. So he's sort of dreaming up, you know, it's a very modern language that they're written in, very modern psychologies. And I loved them. I loved them right. All.
I mean, you mentioned that playing around with fairy tales is nothing new. I mean, we talked about someone like Angela Carter.
Yes.
I mean, hers are all sort of feminist rereadings. Is there a grand vision behind this collection, do you think? I mean, is there something he's trying to say?
I think, you're right, that Angela Carter is the big feminist rereading of these tales. They're very baroque and richly written. This is written in a sort of modern day everyman vernacular, so it's really written, it's literary, but it's very accessible. I think the overarching theme, it's the themes of today, it doesn't have an ism with it. It sort of sums up the malaise and the preoccupations of today, particularly our romantic preoccupations and the way we view love. So I think this is at the heart of it, and it's sort of undercutting the happily ever after, undercutting the romantic notions that we still live with. They're strangely unchanged since we read these fairy tales, aren't they? You know, we still expect to fall in love and to remain in love and never get bored. And this idea of the marriage as the happy ending. And he often begins these tales with the marriage. So it's not the happy ending. It's almost like the unhappy beginning. And that sounds, he's not being cynical about love and marriage. He's saying the happily ever after is a made up thing. And I'm even within the context of a fairy tale going to give you something real within this.
A Wild Swan and Other Tales by Michael Cunningham is out now, published by Fourth Estate. Let's move on now to Beyond Belief, Racist, Sexist, Rude, Crude and Dishonest, The Golden Age of Madison Avenue, which is a collection of the most offensive adverts from the mid-20th century, written by Charles Saatchi. The founder of advertising agency Saatchi & Saatchi guides us through the series of ads, some of which he admits are in bewilderingly poor taste. Arifa, what caught your attention with this?
I think that the visual impact of this, it's just the shock impact. So at first I thought, wow, here's a book about advertising by a former ad man. I hoped for insight both into these, you know, the pioneering ad men of Madison Avenue, the men that we saw in Mad Men. We saw all their fictionalized dramas, but these are the adverts they were actually making. And they really make you see Mad Men in a different way with all its stylized nostalgia, because these are kind of quite abhorrent. So they're a collection. This is sort of weird, horridly mesmerizing collection of adverts from, well, they actually go back to the 20s and 30s, but the focus is that golden era of Madison Avenue advertising, which is the 1960s and 70s. And they're so astonishing in their misogyny and their racism. And those are the two chapters that shocked me the most. So you have images straight away in the opening chapter of really stylish, beautiful, glamorous images of women being dragged by a man by their hair across the floor, cigarette smoke being blown into a woman's face with really uncomfortable, unsettling sexual innuendos involved in that. And there's half-naked women surrounded by these grabby men, you know, quite frightening images. And then this is in a way a reflection of America at the time. You know, these weren't just ad men being horribly misogynistic on their own in a room. They were selling stuff based on the values of the time. And the race stuff is even worse, because remember, this is when the civil rights movement is kicking off, you know. And then you have these adverts with mammies and slave imagery of cotton pickers selling soap and selling, you know, detergents. So there's immensely shocking stuff in here. I was disappointed by his commentary that runs alongside these vivid, shocking images, because it doesn't really tie up his past with this. And I think it's, I actually think it's dishonest to say that this group of adverts and this group of advertisers were dishonest and rude and crude, because it's a continuing sort of line, isn't it? I think we're still sold dishonesty, and we're still sold dreams and fantasies, and they still tap into our insecurities as the adverts were doing here. So
I was going to ask you about that, actually. I mean, do you think there has been a bit of a break since then, or do you very much see our society as a sort of continuation?
Continuation.
Of this?
Well, I think if you look back at this group, you know, if you look at the first chapter with the women and the misogyny, you kind of think we have transformed our view of women. And they just don't appear in adverts in the same humiliating, degrading way that they do here. But on another level, we've had, you know, we do have images of women like looking like dolls, enhanced, and there's a certain message beneath that and an expectation that isn't actually all that different from those glassy-eyed women that we see here. I think in some ways, I mean, we've had current debates about model sizes, haven't we, in the news in the UK, and we've had the beach ready body. Do you remember that? There was a UK poster
campaign last year,
of a woman in a bikini, you know, who was apparently beach ready, and there was protest around that. The fact that there was protest around that means that we won't accept that sort of image. But the fact that advertisers created that in the first place means there is a continuation. There is still the sexism and all the crudity and rudeness that we see here. The best bit, the most coffee table bits of these adverts is the adverts around smoking. So you actually, they're the funniest but most outrageous. So you have babies helping with advertising, images of babies and doctors with these quasi-medical messages saying, it will really soothe your sore throat. There's adverts for antidepressants and tranquilizers, how they can soothe irritable old men and, you know, frazzled mothers and wives. And those things are stuck in Aspic, and we can regard them as period pieces that don't relate to us, because they're just, it's like an advert for saying the world is flat here. You know, there's an advert here with selling weight loss to women by asking them to buy sanitized tapeworm. So, you
brilliant.
Know, yeah.
Beyond belief, racist, sexist, rude, crude and dishonest, The Golden Age of Madison Avenue by Charles Saatchi is out now, published by Booth Clibborn. Arifa, your final choice on today's book review is The Adventures of Holly White and the Incredible Sex Machine by the Australian writer Chrissy Neen. The novel follows protagonist Holly White, who undergoes a sexual awakening in her hometown of Brisbane, and then proceeds to travel the globe reliving experiences from the classics of erotic literature. Arifa, first of all, what did you like about this book?
Yeah, we need to say what we liked before.
I think so.
I think all the ideas behind this book are so original and innovative, I really wanted to like it. So for a start, this teenager, Holly, goes from, you know, this sort of virginal teen Australian girl.
Again, a bit of a sort of archetypal character, that teenage virgin.
In quite an I know I'm going to be positive, but it's quite irritating how that beginning bit has her as this virginal, you know, girl wearing an abstinence ring. It has echoes of Twilight, doesn't it? And YA literature that sort of stresses the importance of virginity. And I'm not saying it's not important, but it's just a very trendy narrative in YA fiction. So it began with that, but it did transform itself. You know, she joins a book club, and she then goes off to Paris and reenacts the stories and scenes from within the canon of sex, you know, erotica literature. So we have her enacting, you know, scenes from Marquis de Sade's stuff, from Aeneas Nin's stories, and Angela Carter's more erotic stuff. So the stories that I read, you know, as contraband as a teenager, I was really looking forward to this sort of this injection of all this literary erotica. And what I thought was also really clever was that she was, you know, combining that erotica with a science fiction element and sort of mashing up genres in that sense. So on paper, I thought this is going to be really original, and I can't wait. But
now.
And now.
let's come to the
nub of it.
Yeah, exactly.
The nub of it was that it was accidentally funny. I thought this is a bold endeavour and I'm really going to read it earnestly, you know, not read it with that sort of puerile Britishness about me, sniggering in a sniggering way. You know, E.L. James's massive success has made it okay to read erotic fiction in public spaces, isn't it? To buy it on, you know, in bookshops. I do think it's a good thing that women write erotic fiction, you know, and this might be aimed at younger women, possibly, and I think that's a good thing. I just think to rewrite Aeneas Nin and James Salter and Marquis de Sade and Erica Jong, these are really iconic, finely written, expert, erotic texts. To do that is almost to set yourself up for failure because these are pale imitations. So unless she is the most artful writer, and I didn't think she was, she's not really going to pull it off because I prefer reading Aeneas Nin. The language is a hard one to, I think, to pitch with a writer of erotica. So here you got a lot of screaming and howling and bucking. And after a while, you know, this was my bedtime reading. I just wanted to fall asleep. That's not the effect that a book of erotic fiction should have. It should sort of really be compelling and you shouldn't be nodding off. And I think maybe it's very personal. Maybe it's me and not the book. And maybe somebody else will pick it up. And I thought it would have been better as a science fiction journey or better as a retelling of those erotic texts, but with less of the outrageous interstellar stuff happening. And
Right. Perhaps
they had, you know, perhaps I would have preferred less genre splicing. And the characters were a little bit sketchy and the plot was, you know, unbelievable, but even within its genre was not convincing for me.
Right. Well, if it's personal, then our listeners will have to make up their own minds. But that was The Adventures of Holly White and The Incredible Sex Machine by Chrissy Neen. And it's out now, published by The Text Publishing Company. And I'm afraid that brings us to the end of today's show. Arifa Akbar, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Matt Alagaya. My producer was Holly Fisher, and the show was researched by Fernando Augusto Pacheco. Join us again at the same time tomorrow for this week's film review. But for now, thank you very much for listening, and goodbye.